I believe every professional, health professional body in the country had come out and released statements against these cuts.
The thing is about the Idle No More movement is it's bringing us together.
People are seeing that the consequences of Plan Nor are unimaginably heavy. The caribou have been driven far, far away.
Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, a show by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This week, Groundwire is produced at CFRU-FM, Guelph's campus and community radio station. We're your hosts. I'm Gary Goh.
And I'm Asia Barclay. In this edition, we'll have updates on Idle No More from coast to coast, as well as mobilizations to fill the interim federal health cuts for refugees and updates on the annual homelessness marathon. But first, here's the headlines.
On January 19th, the Reyes family from Mexico was deported from Montreal. A solidarity demonstration of about 30 people took place outside the Trudeau Airport. Marisol Mendez, Fernando Reyes, and their two teenage children, Ingrid and Eduardo, were forced to report Friday night before they were deported and were unable to say all their goodbyes. The group calling themselves Mexicans United for Regularization denounced the deportation, fearing for the deportees' safety when they returned to their country. Mexicans United for Regularization said that Mexicans who have recently been deported from Canada undergo a risk of kidnapping and extortion in their country. He argued that there have been several documented cases of Mexican asylum seekers found murdered shortly after their return to Mexico. The group claims that every day an average of 7 Mexican refugees are deported from Canada.
On January 4th, 3 prisoners in the Grand Valley Federal Women's Prison went on a 72-hour hunger strike in solidarity with Teresa Spence and Idle No More. Alex Hundert, a G20 political prisoner, currently incarcerated at Central North Correctional Center, also fasted in solidarity with Teresa Spence. Dee from Prison Radio, CKUT, brings us this report.
This prison that we're in is on stolen Anishinaabe land. It was actually part of the Coldwater Tract, for which a land claim settlement was a very recent large land claim settlement. You know, even in here where we have such little access to connection with community as well as the outside world, that people are aware of how atrociously the Canadian and provincial governments have treated Indigenous peoples over the years, and that people inherently are in support of communities and nations standing up for themselves against the government, especially in the light of austerity cuts. And that while it's really difficult for us to come up with something, you know, that effectively contributes to the Idle No More movement here, a one-day solidarity fast was, you know, quite literally the least we could do.
In a judgment released January 7th, the federal court has removed most of the conditions imposed on Mohamed Majoub, a Toronto man detained without charge on the basis of secret information since June 2000. Notably, Mr. Majoub will no longer be forced to wear a GPS tracking device. He will be able to use internet and cell phone, surveillance equipment inside his home will be removed, and his cell phone calls and mail will no longer be subject to automatic surveillance. He will also be able to use the subway and will be able to change his residence without getting prior approval from the government. Yavar Hamid, legal counsel for Mr. Majoub, said, "This change in conditions has been a long time coming. It reveals the utter disproportionality and arbitrariness of bail conditions against Majoub. Moreover, the dissolution of the draconian conditions against Majoub illustrates the unsustainability of the security certificate system and the mythology of the ostensibly unfathomable danger that belies his case." Despite the lifting of his conditions, another secret hearing took place in Ottawa on January 15th. "It is fundamentally unjust that the other side gets to see all the details of the case while I don't," said Mr. Majoub. "Our hands are tied and our eyes blindfolded. Even the special advocates are prevented from doing their job. They are prevented from verifying the information because there are no sources. They can't cross-examine witnesses because they are anonymous."
Major economic disruptions took place on January 16th across Turtle Island in support of Idle No More and Indigenous sovereignty. Rail lines were blocked in Ontario, BC, Alberta, Manitoba, and New Brunswick. Highways were also blocked from the coast of BC to the Trans-Labrador Highway. An estimated 1,000 people marched to the Ambassador Bridge and slowed crossings for several hours. Just this past Thursday, January 24th, Teresa Spence and a number of fasting elders ended their hunger strike. They were honored in a ceremony in Ottawa that morning after 43 days of hunger striking in protest of Bill C-45 and the disrespect of treaty rights. Spence and Elder Raymond Robinson ended their fast with the signing of a 13-point plan endorsed by the Native Women's Association, the Assembly of First Nations, and members of the opposition parties. In a press conference later that day, both Chief Spence and Sean Atleo were quoted as saying that the Idle No More struggle will continue despite the fast ending.
Now it's time for a short music break.
So I sing soul girl, I sing soul girl. There have been times for my family when things got rough, and my mama and my daddy just had enough. Water in the well has just run dry. I can't cry, can't cry. Tears turned to rain and the rain did pour, and the clouds turned to sun and it was day once more. Power from the light, people rose again. Music from the sky, land and earth begin. I sing soul girl, I sing soul, I sing soul girl.
That was Sing Soul Girl by Inez Jasper, featured on the Idle No More Songs for Life album. On January 14th, Gennargi O'Sullivan did a four-hour broadcast in support of Idle No More on CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio, featuring guests Melanie Rita LaCoy, Lillian Howard, and Kat Norris. Listen to the full broadcast in the archives at cooperadio.org.
Thank you for joining us here on Co-op Radio 100.5. Melanie Rita LaCoy, who is a Salish person from the Stalo Nation. Welcome to the show, Melanie. I was really, really surprised when I went to Park Royal and I saw Christopher Alexander Thomas there. He is the chief of the Kwantlen people, and also his brother, Robert Williams, is chief of the Wanik tribe. So here we have all of these chiefs coming out of the woodwork and standing with the rest of First Nations people, especially here in BC, standing with the people that, you know, is amazing. Were you just as surprised as I was?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because Christopher Alexander Thomas, him and I are first cousins. Mm-hmm. So
I see the resemblance.
Yeah. And it's it's really heartwarming to actually be a part of it and come and stand and sing with my cousins. I was brought up in a system, and I am an intergenerational survivor, and I was removed from my mom's custody when I was 13 and made a ward of the Ministry of Children and Families. So kind of lost touch with a lot of my family, so I don't know more. Gives me an opportunity to get close, and it's really heartfelt.
Lillian Howard is in the house with me right now. She is on a fast in solidarity with Teresa Spence.
I'm a Mawichit Muchlet First Nation member, which is part of the Nuchalna Tribal Council on the west coast of Vancouver Island. And on the hunger strike in solidarity with Chief Teresa Spence and the Idle No More events here locally in Vancouver.
Has it been hard for you to focus on things now that you're on this hunger strike, or has it given you clarity?
An inner shift, and some clarity kind of develops, and of course there's a lot of prayer. Physically, you get tired, and but emotionally and spiritually I think you get stronger, and you see things from a different perspective. And it has been through the I'll No More prayer, drumming, singing and dancing that has been very uplifting for me, and that gives me hope for our future, or to the children today and future generations. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's not only on the onus of Aboriginal people to take a stand, it's on the responsibility of other Canadian citizens to take a stand, to share in the stewardship of this land. They have a responsibility as much as we do, because we're in this together, and it's bigger than us.
Kat Norris is a longtime activist. She's also a fellow broadcaster here in Vancouver, and is quite involved in the Idle No More movement.
You know, people that are not organizers that are organizing events, and, you know, this movement has really opened up the hearts and the spirits of our people. And that's something that makes me feel really good, because as a old school organizer, it's been a hard go, you know, over the last 30 years to get our people involved. But with the Idle No More call out, and, you know, the reality, our people learning the reality of the government and how they've been treating our people, and especially with Harper and the Conservatives, you know, they're, you know, along the lines of the old Alliance Party, you know, and what they wanted to do to our people, you know, just stepping on our rights and our human rights. And but the fact that the Harper government has, you know, pushed through these legislations that affect our people without even consulting us, you know, is insane. It's, you know, it's like a dictatorship. You know, he can do whatever he wants because he knows that society, you know, in general, doesn't support our people. But with the education that's, and, you know, the questions that have been asked around Idle No More actions, people are starting to look into these legislations and realizing that a lot of what's being put through is, it's going to impact all of, you know, what's now called Canada, and, you know, and the people that live within Turtle Island, you know. So more and more support is being thrown towards our people in this movement. The thing is about the Idle No More movement is it's bringing us together.
Mm-hmm.
It's bringing us back together, which is how we were in the first place.
Under the Plan R, the Quebec government is hoping to become a world leader in so-called clean, green energy. But many are concerned that the project is anything but clean. Marie-Louise André McKenzie is an 86-year-old Innu elder from the tiny community of Shefferville, Quebec, 700 miles northeast of Montreal. She's singing a traditional Innu women's song. McKenzie has deep and dignified wrinkles and a large smile on her face. Born in the woods far outside of Shefferville, and speaking only in Innu, McKenzie says the new development projects threaten her community and culture.
I will always protect my land and my language. If you're aware, you know that our land is all broken up. Shefferville is broken and full of holes now. If I die, all will die with me. I hope the children will preserve it. This is my sadness. Even if I don't want it, they will break it anyways. It's already started. I know this because I have seen it. It's the children I have pity for. The impact of the development is that the youth are happy because they have jobs, but they are not conscious of all they are losing. They are lured by money.
Marie-Louise André McKenzie is not the only one concerned about the dams. Almost everybody I speak to says they think the Plan Nord will cause more harm than good. Jeannette Pilote, who lives on the small reserve of Ouachat, says she's already seeing the effects of the development.
Ils voient que le Plan Nord là, c'est imaginable. C'est imaginable parce que y a les arbres.
People are saying that the consequences of Plan Nord are unimaginably heavy. The caribou have been driven far, far away. Our grandparents always knew where the caribou would be. Now they're moving away. Some men left to go hunting last weekend and didn't find any caribou in the place they were supposed to be.
Under the Plan Nord, the government insists that half of the northern region will be protected, and Quebec Premier Pauline Marois has stated that she wants to turn an area of land roughly the size of Vermont into a national park. Jeannette's son, Pichou, is wary of such promises.
Plan Nord, ce qu'ils disent, c'est que y aura.
They tell us with the Plan Nord that 50% of the land will be protected and 50% will be destroyed. And when I say destroyed, I mean permanently, for good. But that destroyed 50% is 50% of our history, of our roots, our ancestors, and our culture. As indigenous peoples will be assimilated. For me, this is unacceptable. I don't want that for my children.
Both Pichou and Jeannette have taken part in direct action to try to stop the Hydro-Quebec development on the Romaine River. Highway 138, the main route for the construction crews, has seen numerous blockades. Tree trunks are strewn across the highway to stop vehicles, and the protesters camp out beside a fire. For Making Contact, I'm Aaron Lakoff, Maniotenem.
I don't know more. Coat on, it's a cold song. With the heart of my elders, this an old song. We have to go strong when they hold bonds. Those politicians with their souls gone. We row on the river that we flow on, and keep showing the world what we know is wrong. My eagle eyes are sharper than the scissors held by the barber. Cutting the braids of the rivers, that's a cut to and from Stephen Hartford. Your treason is harder than the stone in your heart, sir. I see more pride as we fight Bill C-45. We'll make you mortified that you ever tried to attack a people who stand 45. This land is for the lies who stand for truth and not for lies. I know what I'm fighting for, and what I'm fighting for. You know what I'm fighting for this, I don't know more.
That was Idle No More by Hebes the Earth Child. Healthcare workers, students, and activists rallied on January 23rd outside the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care in Toronto to demand the Ontario government step up and fill the gap left by the federal cuts to the interim federal health program. They presented a petition with over 1,000 signatures of healthcare providers and community members.
Refugee help! Refugee help! Refugee help!
Mina Ramos interviewed Nanki Rai from Health for All.
The way we found out about this drastic change to the program is through people actually coming forward to their healthcare providers and bringing in these letters that the Canadian Conservative government had sent to them, letting them know that as of July 30th, they would lose and no longer be eligible for medical coverage in the country. So of course, this was alarming. We had no idea what was coming forward. This wasn't being passed through some kind of a bill where we could actually engage with the changes that were coming forward and attack them before they went through. And so the cuts to the interim federal health program, this medical coverage, happened on July 1st of 2012, of last year on Canada Day. And it was important to actually put them into a context because this was happening while lots of restructuring or a drastic, really dismantling of Canada's immigration system was happening under this government. For those of us who were organizing against the government's attacks on migrant communities, we really were able to see the IFH cuts as not some part of an isolated, you know, piece of legislation, but really part of a well-planned agenda that's led by our Minister of Immigration and Citizenship, Jason Kenney, and also quite a growing anti-vocal migrant, anti-migrant movement within the Conservative Party. So, you know, with that in background and context, of last year, there were, you know, all throughout the year, there were so many different actions that were being planned. Of course, migrant communities have been resisting, attacks against them and also the lack of access to healthcare for a long time. But a lot of people within the healthcare sector also joined forces. And we saw, you know, many disruptions of Conservative MPs, demonstrations were happening. I believe every health professional body in the country had come out and released statements against these cuts. The Saskatchewan government last year in November announced that they would actually pay for the chemotherapy of an individual who had recently been diagnosed with cancer and was no longer getting coverage for the chemotherapy. And since then, a bunch of other provincial governments have also said that they will, you know, they've verbally committed to actually saying that they will fill the gap of the IFH cuts and actually just send the bill to the federal government.
Right, there's like Quebec and Manitoba have responded.
Exactly. And so because of that, Health for All has decided, you know, especially with the Liberal Leadership Convention coming up in 2 weekends in Toronto, we've decided to really this entire month push the provincial government in Ontario to commit. You know, they've verbally denounced, and that's really the response that we've been getting. You know, we support you verbally, but we really want to see some action and for them to commit to actually filling the gap for the IFH cuts while also making sure that the federal government isn't let off the hook by any means and we continue to pressure them.
Now it's time for Groundwire's Community Radio Report. The annual Homelessness Marathon is taking place this February 20th. Community radio stations across Canada will participate in a 14-hour broadcast. Carly spoke with Candace, the national coordinator of the 11th annual Homelessness Marathon.
This year is the 11th year of the marathon, and it originally came to be in its Canadian version because it started in the U.S. To create space for people who live in the realities of homelessness and poverty, to create space in the media for these people to have a platform in the mass media to talk about their realities and their lives and essentially say anything that they wish to say that they feel expresses their circumstances or would help broaden the public's perception of what homelessness can look like. We encourage people to call in at any point during the marathon in a toll-free number. And this is meant to be people who have lived experience with poverty, housing issues, or homelessness to express themselves live on this national radio broadcast that is heard on a mass scale by over 30 campus community radio stations, as well as listened to in the archives online. So it's just also symbolic of being out on the streets. The marathon began with us here in Montreal. Montreal, broadcasting 14 hours live on the streets. So to kind of dramatize the fact that people live on the streets every night, and symbolically to be outside in solidarity. Right. So at the 2012 NCRC conference in Kingston this past year, a motion was passed to sort of look at the sustainability of the marathon, and it was decided that we this year would take the necessary steps to decentralize the marathon, because in past years we've had contributing stations in other provinces and cities and communities, but the majority of the content was being produced by CKUT in Montreal. So the idea is to decentralize the marathon, invite as many stations as possible within the 14-hour time frame to host and focus really locally on what the situation of homelessness and poverty and housing issues looks like in their community. So that's one way that it has evolved, and will be, I think, in the next years, taking this further to decentralize, also so that this is spread out and becomes an effort on the programming front by many cities and communities and radio stations, of course. So on the hosting front, this year we've got 12 stations hosting, and that's one way the stations are participating. And so far confirmed broadcasting the marathon, we've got about 25 stations that will be broadcasting either live on their airwaves the night of the marathon, which is the night of February 20th, and other stations will be playing segments of the marathon, either live or rebroadcasting audio in our archives. Yeah, we're almost approaching our goal of getting at minimum 30 stations to broadcast the event, the marathon, and hopefully we'll far exceed that. If you haven't already done so, to confirm that you will be participating in the marathon this year by broadcasting the event live, either the 14 hours or segments of the 14-hour broadcast as it happens. And if you haven't confirmed, please email marathon@ckut.ca to confirm. And when you do so, we'll send you details about the technical logistics of doing that. The 11th annual Homelessness Marathon will be happening on February 20th this year, 2013, that is a Wednesday evening, going from 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 7 a.m. on Thursday, February 21st, the morning of. So that's for the 14 hours. And check your local community radio station for your time zone, and also check the www.ckut.ca/homeless website, where you can find the schedule. We've got a national stream of 14 hours of content with the 12 stations hosting across the country, and CKUT in Montreal will also be serving up its own local marathon, 14 hours of panel discussions. So both of those schedules are available on the marathon website.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire. From CFRU in Guelph, thanks for tuning in. Music this week was by Inez Jasper and Hebe's The Earth Child. Headlines this week were written by Carly Forbes. We also thank Gennargio Sullivan, Mina Ramos, D. Lecomte, Aaron Lakoff, and Making Contact. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station, or download it at groundwire.ncra.ca. Groundwire is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.